How much bikes are there?
I'd say there's 100% of bikes in out there.
There was just like dead radio silence for like 3 seconds. That's how my jokes usually go.
Prison was probably the best experience I've ever had in my life.
Hope you didn't get in a car wreck from that hilarious story that Frankie told.
It is like Comedy Central around here tonight.
It's got like one line. I'm in so much pain.
Welcome to the Can Be Now podcast.
We are the best and easiest way to stay connected to what's happening in your hometown. I'm Tyler Frankie.
And I'm Tyler Clausen.
The Oregon Court of Appeals has sided with the state's land use board in upholding the city of Canby's approval in the long-running case of the 7-acre subdivision located at the end of North Maple Street. City Attorney Joe Lindsay informed the City Council at their last meeting that the appellate court had affirmed the decision without issuing an opinion in the case. It's unclear if this is a final twist in a saga that has been ongoing for over 4 years. The decision could be appealed again to the Oregon Supreme Court, but City Attorney Lindsay did not indicate that he thought that would happen. The proposal was for a 22-lot subdivision on, you guessed it, 7 acres of land at the end of North Maple, technically 6.84 acres, but who's counting? The project, which was designed in 6 phases by Canby Development, LLC, has been in the works since at least 2015. It was heard and approved unanimously by the Planning Commission in 2017 and appealed to the City Council that same year by local attorney Michael McNichols, Tony Polito, and the Friends of Northeast Maple Street. Counselors heard the case in January 2018, and they also approved it with conditions. McNichols and company then appealed to the State Land Use Board of Appeals, also called BUBA, which ultimately upheld the city's decision. McNichols then filed the case with the Oregon Court of Appeals. One of the main bones of contention was over the proposed use of the Molalla Forest Logging Road, which is on city-owned land and exists within a conservation easement benefiting the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. The city approved the subdivision's request to use a road for emergency access purposes. McNichols had appealed on the basis that the city didn't have the legal authority to grant such a variance, and also that this use would be out of line with the existing easement and municipal codes. LUBA, however, and now the Oregon Court of Appeals, felt otherwise.
The Clackamas County Sheriff's Office has arrested one of its own employees on domestic violence charges. A Sheriff's Office supervisor became aware of allegations on May 14th concerning the Clackamas County Jail deputy's recent trip to Las Vegas, Nevada. That employee, Brandon Carnes, 34, of Oregon City, was immediately placed on administrative leave upon returning to work the following day. A criminal investigation followed, led by Sheriff's Office investigators working with detectives from Milwaukee PD. The Clackamas County District's Attorney Office will also be notified and consulted on the matter. As a result of their investigation, detectives determined that there was probable cause to arrest Carnes on one charge of strangulation stemming from a separate incident that allegedly occurred in Clackamas County in January of 2019. The incidents in Las Vegas and Clackamas County both involved Carnes' ex-girlfriend. Brandon Carnes was arrested on Thursday and booked at Clackamas County Jail on one count of felony strangulation. Bail was set at $100,000. Detectives continue to investigate the local case and are working with investigators from Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department to investigate an alleged crimes that occurred on Carnes' trip. Carnes has worked at the jail since September 2008. In response to the arrest, Sheriff Craig Roberts issued the following statement. We take all domestic violence allegations seriously. These allegations are being swiftly and thoroughly investigated by our detectives, working with our partners at Milwaukee PD, the DA's office, and in Las Vegas. I urge anyone impacted by domestic violence to contact a Safe Place Family Justice Center or Clackamas Women's Services.
Statistics show that 76% of women murdered by intimate partners were stalked first. A bill passed out of the legislature last week would change gun ownership laws in an effort to keep guns out of the hands of domestic abusers and stalkers. House Bill 2013 was passed by the Senate Thursday on a 25-3 vote. It had previously passed in the House and now goes to Governor Kate Brown for her signature. The bill makes it illegal for a person to possess a firearm if he or she is the subject of a court order and does not request or attend a hearing within the required time period. It also defines a way and time period within which those who are prohibited from possessing firearms must turn their guns over to law enforcement, a licensed gun dealer, or a safe third party. We hear it all the time from gun rights advocates that the gun isn't the problem, it's the person using the gun, said Senator James Manning, a Democrat from Eugene, who co-carried the bill on the Senate floor. This bill makes sure the person who's going to go out and shoot another person doesn't have a gun. That helps to solve the problem, and this bill is going to save lives. Under Oregon law, certain individuals are already prohibited from possessing firearms or ammunition if they have restraining orders against them stemming from stalking, intimidating, molesting, or menacing an intimate partner or child, and if there was a finding by the court that they pose a credible threat to the safety of another person. But currently, these individuals can simply choose not to request response hearings or not show up at scheduled hearings and still be able to legally possess guns. This bill closes that loophole by requiring these hearings and requiring that respondents attend them in order for them to have a chance to keep their firearms. According to Children First for Oregon, nearly 2,900 children nationally are killed with guns each year, and 1,700 of those are homicides. Gun violence is the second most common cause of death for children. Former Benton County District Attorney Pete Sandrock testified in writing that every year an average of 600 women in America are killed by gun violence nationally, and a third of them die within 30 days of obtaining a court protective order. The bill also establishes the protocols for turning over firearms when a court has found that the person shouldn't possess guns. These protocols include providing proof of transferring the firearms to a local law enforcement agency, licensed gun dealer, or third party, as directed within 24 hours of becoming subject to a court order.
Were you attempting to rob a Plaid pantry just before 1 a.m. on April 28th? If so, the Clackamas County Sheriff's Office says that they would love to reunite you with the hatchet that you left at the scene. At approximately 12:56 a.m. on Sunday, April 28th, an employee of the Oak Grove Plaid Pantry called 911 to report an attempted armed robbery. The suspect wore a face mask and can be seen on surveillance footage outside looking into the store windows to check the scene before entering the store. The suspect pulled a 12-inch hatchet from his pants at the convenience store counter. The clerk responded by pulling a concealed handgun and then called 911 while holding the suspect at gunpoint. I guess the guy wasn't really expecting that. The suspect then placed the hatchet on the counter and reportedly told the clerk, "I'm sorry, I'll leave." The suspect got on his knees with his hands in the air, then abruptly fled the store. Deputies responded to the scene and performed a canine track, but were unable to locate the suspect. The suspect was described as a Hispanic man in his early 20s, approximately 5'5", wearing dark black jacket with hood, some sort of dark green or olive ski mask, khaki pants, and dark sneakers with white soles. Though the clerk's actions appear to have diverted a robbery, they also may have cost him his job. According to Coin 6 News in Portland, the president of Plaid Pantry says the clerk was let go following the incident. He says the company has a zero-tolerance policy for weapons, and clerks are trained to de-escalate violent confrontations to avoid injury.
In sports this week, congratulations to senior Bryce Ard and junior Isabella Kasalik, who represented Canby High in this weekend's track and field state finals. Izzy finished fourth in the 800 meter, while Bryce took home sixth in the javelin. Way to make Canby proud, guys. Great job. Several other sports came to dramatic ends this week in playoff action. The Canby lacrosse team saw their season end against Oregon Episcopal School, or OES, the two-time defending state champs. The Cougs had a tremendous season, especially after battling through a lot of adversity with the loss of their home field for games and practices due to maintenance issues. Despite the extremely tough opponent, the Cougs battled until the very end Wednesday night before falling 13-6. The Canby baseball and softball teams were long shots in their first round playoff matches, and although the final results went to the favorites, our Cougars certainly fought hard enough to make them sweat. The baseball team led six-seeded Roseburg 1-0 until the bottom of the sixth, when the Indians' bats got hot and they scored three straight. It was an outburst the Cougs weren't able to match in the final inning, falling 3-1. In softball, the Cougs were matched up against 5th-ranked Jesuit, and they trailed 5-2 until a 3-run homer in the bottom of the 6th by senior Parker Allhands. The two squads stayed tied through the 7th and went to extra innings, where the Crusaders got bailed out with a walk-off homer. Great seasons all around. Congrats and thank you to our senior athletes. To all the rest, we'll see you in the fall. Go Cougars!
Located just off the corner of 13th and South Ivy is one of the most magical places on Earth, Puddin' River Chocolates. That's where Chief Chocolatier Teresa Sassy and her team of employees hand make some of the richest, most delicious gourmet chocolates you can find anywhere. Yeah, that's right. Willy Wonka wishes he was this good. Teresa uses the highest quality free trade cocoa from around the globe and locally sourced hazelnuts, berries, and other ingredients to create world-class confections that are a treat to the eyes and the taste buds. And they do more than chocolate. The classic fondue is an ideal blend of Swiss cheese, wine, and spices that you have got to try. Puddin' River's creations make a great gift for a loved one, or hey, for yourself, because you know what? You deserve it. I deserve it, Frankie! Find them at PuddinRiverChocolates.com. Are you a small business owner or maybe thinking of investing in yourself with your very own startup? Awesome! Now all you have to do is reach potential customers at a time when consumers have never been more fragmented, more distracted, or more difficult to reach. If that sounds hard, believe me, it is. That's why I make Frankie do it.
Carrie and her team at Promotional Strategies offer strategic, purposeful solutions to build your brand with lasting promotional items that make sense for you and your company. They are creative geniuses who will deliver advertisements that people actually thank you for and will use every day. We've tried other sellers, and we trust Carrie to provide high-quality branded items that we can be proud of. Find them at 695 Southeast 1st Avenue in Canby or online at ps266swag.com. The Gettysburg Address by Abraham Lincoln. Read by Ed Grotsky.
67 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation or any nation so conceived and so dedicated can long endure. We are met on a great battlefield of that war. We have come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who here gave their lives that that nation might live. It is altogether fitting and proper that we should do this. But in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men, living and dead, who struggled here have consecrated it far above our poor power to add or detract. The world would little note nor long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here. It is for us, the living, rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to the cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion, that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Happy Memorial Day.
God bless America.
My guests on the Canby Conversation today are Ada and Ray Stout. Ada is a resident of Canby out here on North Holly Street. I'm meeting her in person here at her house. How are you, Ada?
Great.
Great. And Ray, her son, is calling in from Montana, where he lives and works as a journalist for a newspaper out there. Is that right, Ray?
Yeah.
How are you?
Fine, thanks.
Good. Thanks so much for being on the show for us. And we have Ada and Ray on to talk about their family and some of the cool military service and that they did in their lives, and a cool way that their legacy is being kept alive by some veteran groups that we're about to tell you about. But we wanted to start with you, Ray, because from what I understand, you're a little bit of the family historian. You're actually working on a family history or a book of some sort. Is that right?
That's right.
So can you tell us about your grandfather, who served in World War I, and your uncle, his son, who served in World War II?
My grandfather was not somebody who wanted to help the World War II effort at first. When the draft registration day was held in 1917, he was the only one.
And we should say his name was Ray Stout.
That's right, Raymond Roy Stout.
And you're named after him, is my understanding.
That's right.
Yeah, Ada's nodding, but she's not very talkative. Sorry, go ahead.
He didn't want to be drafted. The draft registration officer who filled out his card said that he was fairly, I think, surly and unpatriotic.
Surly and unpatriotic?
Yeah, I'm not sure about the word surly, but something to that effect.
And wow.
He said they would have to kill him to get him. But he did register, and he became eventually, he went to training at Camp Dodge in Iowa and another camp in Arkansas, and sailed from New Jersey to Liverpool, England, and then France, where he fought with the 166th Infantry Division,
wow,
which was called the Rainbow Division.
Mm-hmm.
And he must have accepted that he was in the Army because he was discharged with excellent character. I don't know if that was common or not, but he did serve, and I think I was told by one of his sons that he was proud of it, that he had served, even though he didn't want to go.
Mm.
And my uncle Cecil Stout was a bombardier. He flew 30 missions as a bombardier, and he was, that was a full tour of duty.
Mm-hmm.
He received a Distinguished Flying Cross, but that was a fairly common award for the 8th Air Force in England. I think it was probably just for finishing the 30 missions.
Yeah.
Not that that was anything small, but it wasn't like a singular heroic act or anything.
Right. Right. 30 missions, though, that's incredible. And do you know anything about the circumstances in which he enlisted? I mean, did he, was he surly and unpatriotic, or did he, you know, that was obviously a very, you know, a time in which a lot of people were wanting to serve in the war effort. I imagine he was part of that volunteering or something of that nature.
No, he was willing to serve. He joined, actually. His father had gone to a movie in Portland, from where they lived in outside of Wilhelmina, on December 7th, the day that the United States was pulled into the war.
Sure, Pearl Harbor.
And they had heard on the radio that Pearl Harbor had been bombed, and on the drive back, he told his dad he wanted to join, and his parents supported him. And his son, Cecil's son, told me later that he, after he got out of the war, he read up a lot of, I guess, kind of history and philosophy books, and decided that there's just no reason to ever go to war. So he became kind of a pacifist, you might say.
Oh, interesting. But I know that, you know, the Pearl Harbor thing, I've talked to a lot of World War II vets, and that's almost always kind of the watershed moment when they decided to enlist, was, you know, that attack.
Yeah, it sounds like it was a pretty common reason for a lot of people to join.
Yeah. Your uncle, Cecil Stout, in World War II, he had a number of, you know, kind of close brushes with death. He was involved in his plane went down at one point. Is that right?
Yeah, it was actually a training mission only a few days after his unit had arrived in England.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a low-level flight where they were training for a raid on Ploiești, Romania, which became a really famous kind of fiasco. But they were flying in close formation, and a couple of the planes hit each other in midair, and that plane went down, and Cecil was knocked unconscious. And the navigator, who rides in really close quarters in the nose of the plane with the bombardier, he was killed in that accident. And a few others were injured. So that was, I think, one of the first tragedies for their unit after they arrived in England. We don't know of any other missions he flew on, so I don't know how close the brushes with death he had on those, but there was definitely that one.
Yeah. And one of the planes that he served on, and I think, unless I'm wrong, it was this one that was involved in the incident, it was called Heaven Can Wait?
Well, that's not for certain now. Further research kind of indicates that that plane may not have actually had that name.
Okay.
It may have been an unknown plane. But that's what we thought for a while.
Gotcha.
But that may not be the case.
That would have been pretty ironic if... He survived a brush with death on a plane called Heaven Can Wait.
Yeah, a lot of those planes did have names that it kind of makes you do a double take.
Right.
We do know the one plane he flew on was called, and I forget the name of it now. I'll think of it in a moment.
Yeah, as soon as we turn off the recorder, it'll come to you, right?
Right.
Any other stories from your uncle's service? I know you've looked into it quite a bit.
Well, my grandfather said that his greatest battles with the cooties from the day he entered until the day he got out of the Army.
Mm-hmm.
Longest battle experience I had was fighting cooties from July 5th, 1918 to April 8th, 1919.
Mm-hmm. It's a long time.
Won the battle after heroic efforts by means of steam and kerosene.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know my grandfather. He died before I could remember him very much. And my uncle, I knew that he had been in the Army Air Forces, but I was, by the time he died, I just had gained the interest that I have now. So I don't know much about either of their careers other than what I've gotten from official records.
Yeah. What has motivated you to do this research, though, to dig into your family's history and their past, and especially their military service?
I think I realized that history is something that does affect people in the present day.
Absolutely.
And I think when you find that there are interesting parts of your own ancestors, you realize that all the more about history.
Hmm. Yeah, cool. Well, thanks so much for sharing some of those, some of that history. It's I love those stories, and you know, they call the World War II generation the greatest generation. And like I said, I've met a number of veterans from that era, and we have absolutely so much that we can, you know, that my generation and other generations after them can learn and gain, and hopefully we do before they're gone. Sadly. But there's another part to the story, and this is where Ada, who has been waiting patiently here, gets to come in, because there is an organization in Salem. Well, there's a VFW post. The VFW is everywhere. But the VFW post in Salem, they do another part of what they do is a uniform display museum, where they have hundreds of uniforms from all different eras and all different branches. They collect, actual uniforms are donated to them, and they will restore them if needed. They'll find the period appropriate and rank appropriate insignia and all that. And Ada, you were able to meet them and make a donation. Tell us that story.
One afternoon last summer, I went down in my basement and I was looking for something in an old trunk, and I came across this footlocker that I didn't know was there.
Yeah. What were you looking for?
I think it was a scrapbook.
Oh, okay. And your basement, you said, is you don't go down there too often.
No, it's not well lit, and it's dusty, and it's a dirt floor.
Yeah, yeah.
But I found this footlocker with Cecil's name on it.
Mm. And so your brother-in-law.
My brother-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
And so I opened it, and here are these uniforms. So I told Ray about it, and when he came home, we started talking about what to do with them.
Mm.
And somehow he got a hold of Tom Vanderhoof.
With the VFW?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so he and Tom arranged a time and date for them, for Tom and some other vets, mm-hmm. to come to my house and get them.
Yeah.
And so since then, they've restored them, and they're on display currently at the state capitol, and then they will go into the museum. Mm-hmm. So I'm delighted with the research Ray did in order to find this, and also that you know Tom as a friend.
Right, yeah.
And that we could do this podcast.
Yeah, yeah. Tom is an awesome guy, and there's a few other people that do this work with him, you know, finding the uniforms. But this is how I heard the story, was I've never seen somebody get so excited about uniforms, right? Tom's a great guy. He's a vet, and he just loves history, kind of like you do, Ray. And he loves to preserve uniforms. And they, especially like, I think the...
World War One
From your father-in-law. Ada was a little concerned when he heard the age of it, and then, oh, it was in a footlocker in a basement with a dirt floor.
Right, yeah.
And it did turn out that it was not in great condition, but they've restored it. They've done a ton of work. And we have some pictures that we'll share with you guys if you want to check our social media. It looks pretty awesome. Ray, have you had a chance to... So you were involved with this... trade-off with the uniforms, and you were able to meet the guys as well?
Yes and no, a little bit. I found the place in Salem that does the restoration, preservation, and I contacted Tom, and he and a couple of other people came to get the uniforms. I wasn't involved directly after I called Tom. I gave him information about my uncle and my grandfather's careers, but other than that, that's about the extent of what I did.
Oh, gotcha. So that's where they, because one thing they do with the displays is they'll display the uniforms, and they'll have the service details, kind of the bios, and so it sounds like that information that was with Ray and Cecil's uniform came from you.
Yeah, most of it.
Yeah.
Tom did a little bit. Tom did most of the what he found on my grandfather, because I had lost access temporarily to my grandfather's information.
Hmm.
But they have it now, and just like I now remember the name of that one plane we know of that Cecil flew in while on duty.
Yeah.
It was called Yours Truly.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. That's a nice name for a plane as well. Well, we're almost out of time, but I have one last question that I wanted to maybe hear from both of you, if I could. I will start with Ada, but what do you think of just, you know, what happened with this legacy of your family's military history being able to be preserved and live on and be on display?
I'm very happy about it. I think these guys put their life on the line.
Absolutely.
And they shouldn't be forgotten.
Hmm.
So I'm happy that that Tom became involved and that the uniforms are preserved and the stories. I wanted to say one thing about my father-in-law. He said, "Don't tell me about fancy French food." He said, when I was stationed in France, all they fed us was boiled turnips.
See, he sounds like he might have been a little surly. You know, I think that recruiter was not...
He was funny.
Yeah. So he never had any good French food. That's too bad.
No.
Yeah. Oh. But yeah, I think it's cool just that legacy of service passed on from father to son, and that they're able to be now displayed together. Mm-hmm. I think that's quite a testament, you know, to be part of that collection. What about you, Ray? What are your thoughts on, you know, what was able to happen through the work of the VFW and the Uniform Display Museum?
It's gratifying. I'm glad that things like this find what you feel like is a proper place for them, rather than staying in a trunk in a basement and not get recognized for the significant monumental times in our history that they can represent. And I wish I had done this while they were alive somehow. You know, I didn't have much of a chance with my grandfather and I just wasn't interested when my uncle was alive, but I guess it's better late than never, and I feel pretty good that these are in a better place now.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, I think that that's a good place to end it. Thank you both so much for your time and telling me this story, and happy Memorial Day.
Thank you.
Same to you. Thanks a lot.
Absolutely. So I'm here with Derek Hill, president of Advantage Mortgage in Canby. I was wondering what's going on in the mortgage industry right now.
The mortgage industry is on fire right now. The big thing that's really exciting for us is that we are now an independent mortgage broker, which means that we can offer substantially lower rates and lower fees for our customers. For example, we just got a loan last week and the realtor said, hey, I think you should go talk to Derek at Advantage Mortgage. And sure enough, we got the borrower 3/4 better rate, and we saved them 14 grand in fees.
Cool. So where can people find you?
So office number is 503-266-5800, or they can find us on the web at findtheadvantage.com. But most people just give us a holler or they stop in.
Yeah. Cool. Thanks, Derek.
You bet. Advantage Mortgage, NMLS number 1770599. Derek Hill's NMLS number 50183. Equal housing opportunity.
Don't you hate it when you're just getting caught up on your favorite show and then your video streaming service drops it without warning? Wouldn't it be cool if you could record unlimited programs at once and watch them whenever and wherever you want? Meet Easy Video from DirectLink, the only app-based TV service in Canby that includes most of the major live local broadcast channels, sports, and national networks. Easy Video is, well, easy. It's compatible with your Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, smartphone, and laptop, so you have more options for how and where you watch TV. And the best part of all, Easy Video members save an average of $360 a year over traditional cable. Say goodbye to HD fees, DVR fees, equipment rentals, and costly installation. Go to directlink.coop/EZV or visit them at the corner of Southeast 2nd and Juniper Street in Canby to learn more about the future of TV. Welcome back, listeners. Some of you may remember a few segments we did a while back with John Tate and his buddy, Jax. John Tate is the co-founder of Better Homes and Gardens Realty in Canby. Jax is his German short-haired pointer and constant companion. The two left Canby in April on a cross-country bike ride that is expected to take about 3 months and end up in Jacksonville, Florida. At least that's what we hope. He joins us on the line now from, I think, somewhere out near Santa Fe. Is that right, John?
Yes, San Mexico.
Yeah, and we're calling on Messenger. I'm kind of in a weird place too that I'll tell you about, so we apologize for the technical difficulties that may arise, but it's so good to hear your voice, man. How are you doing?
Doing great.
Good.
This trip has really been a lot of fun.
So let's say you're right into Florida. You're right into Florida, and just to clue people in who may have forgotten, this is obviously a big adventure for you and your friend Jax, but the real point of it is raising funds and awareness for Canines for Warriors, a wonderful nonprofit organization that matches shelter dogs with wounded warriors, veterans suffering from PTSD or military sexual trauma or traumatic brain injury, TBI. It's an awesome thing that you're doing, and sorry, didn't mean to interrupt, but tell us about the trip and what it's been like so far.
Yes, no, and that it's an awesome thing to do, the Warriors, and the message that they, you know, about that organization that just kind of comes with the little sign on Jax's trailer is really resonating with people
really
of all sorts, and I expected to see goodness in people as I traveled, because I know that when we just consume media and we just look at internet comments, all that, we tend to see the worst. You know, it's just so easy to throw careless comments out there.
Yeah.
But I know that in person, just about everybody I've met, it, you know, has something great about them, something good and nice and generous. And I'm seeing that out here. And I'm also seeing huge generosity towards and affection for for our veterans and ex-service members.
That's awesome.
You know, the conversation always turns to them because of, you know, because of our mission. You know, that's just what we talk about. And now it's Memorial Day, and we just rode into Santa Fe, and on every light post coming in on the main road into Santa Fe from Albuquerque, there is a picture of a veteran who his or her life in service of this country, and it's called Santa Fe Salutes. And it's really, you know, it's just really well done. It shows what wars they were in, and
that's awesome.
A lot of appreciation.
There must be hundreds of them.
I'm sorry, I that cut out in here.
Yeah, no, I said that's awesome. There must be hundreds of them.
Yes, yeah, there are. And yeah. It's, you know, it's a great thing. So it's a great topic to start up, taking care of veterans who have kind of given their life another way. You know, they're alive, but stuck, and they need help.
Yeah.
And we can help them.
Yeah. 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 That's all. I've been following I've been following you on your website, rollingwithjacks.com, and on Instagram and Facebook, and you've been doing pretty good on the daily updates. You've missed a few days, John, but I won't hold it against you. I know you've been busy and had some difficulties along the way. Yeah, with the bikes and stuff. You've had some gear issues, I know. But I've seen some of the stories, and that's my favorite part of following you, is some of the stories that you've seen of people that have taken you in, you know, just with open arms and have offered, like, their homes, offered food, and just are so excited about what you're doing and excited to meet you. And, of course, Jax. I think Jax has made some canine friends, it seems.
He has. And the people make no bones about it. It's all about the dog. I'm just the mother. Everybody wants to see the dog.
Yeah. That's what it feels like being a dad sometimes. It's just like, oh, you're here too? Where's the baby? Like.
Yeah. Well, people have been incredibly generous. And I am going to try to catch up completely to today. Tonight on my blog post, because I've missed all the New Mexico people that have been so nice. And that is one surprising thing about this trip. I came into it thinking people are good. I came into it expecting, you know, that the message would resonate with people, and that and that people would generally respond with kindness. But what I didn't really really expect was the random, really proactive acts of kindness of people who have no idea what I'm doing out here. Just some guy riding a bike somewhat inconveniently at times in the roadway, and people are honking and waving and, you know, cheering me on, going up hills and stuff, just because they see a guy trying hard. They don't know what in New Mexico, this will be in one of my posts, on the Navajo Nation, I'm riding along and I'm actually thinking about that. What about a guy riding a bike with a trailer? They don't know a dog's in there or anything.
Yeah.
What makes people respond like that? And I'm in the middle of a sort of, you know, I got plenty of time to think about stuff like that.
Right.
All of a sudden, a little pickup truck pulls in front of me, whips onto the shoulder. A lady gets out, and she's got a bag in her hand. She runs up to me and goes, "We just had a cookout, and I wanted you to have all these hot dogs and hamburgers that I was taking."
Wow.
She hands it to me. She couldn't have known. She didn't know anything about canines for warriors, or that there was a dog in the trailer, or, you know, she probably saw the flag on the trailer.
Yeah.
That might have, but she just was super nice. And I've been running into stuff like that all the time. People are kind of teaching me how to be, you know, they reminding me that you you don't have to have a reason to be nice. And there's tons of great people out here. So anyway, thought I'd share that because that's nicer than even I thought people were. And it's happening all the time. And I'm not making it happen. I'm not asking for anything. It's just people.
Well, I think that what you're doing is awesome. I think that that comes through. I think what you're doing a very, very selfless thing, you know, to put yourself out there and to try to raise awareness about this wonderful and funds for this wonderful organization. But I'll just say, you know, not knowing you super well, but having met you and talked to you a few times, I think that there is something about you, John, that, you know, your spirit and your kindness kind of shines through. And whether you want to call it karma or whatever, you know, I think that there is something that, you know, when you put goodness into the world, you often get it back. So I think that you're seeing some of that. At least that's what I believe. So.
Well, that could be. I don't know.
Well, we've got a couple more months to figure it out, right?
Yeah, we did. We'll see how. So tomorrow, I'm going into the hinterlands again. These stretches on the trip where I don't really have a place to stay, and I'm hoping to be able to camp somewhere.
Yeah,
you're hoping that the people there will let me.
Yeah.
Camp there.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'm just, you know, I'm out of luck. That I'm going through another one of those tomorrow, and you know, we'll see how the world we'll see how my karma is going.
Well, let us tomorrow. Know. Put it in your next blog post when you get out of the hinterlands. It's crazy because, like, you know, I've done quite a bit of flying. And you fly city to city, you know, and you feel like the country's not that big because you can get from coast to coast in like 5 or 6 hours, you know. But when I've also driven it, and that took like a week, you know. But to actually bike it, you realize how big this country is, you know, and how much empty roads there are in between the cities.
Yeah, and without benefit, I see a lot of motorcycle tourists, and without benefit of an internal combustion engine, it's just giant. These guys will say something like, oh, you know, we're in Shiprock, New Mexico. I'm headed for Boise, but I hear the weather's bad, so I'll go to, you know, Texas.
Right,
and then they're gone.
Yeah,
and they're halfway to Texas before I'm out of town.
Right,
and because
your internal combustion engine is your legs.
Right, and food, right. Every kind of food.
Have you been trying some? Have you been encountering some new kinds of food or anything fun like that?
I've been trying to. You know, I'm a healthy eater at home, and that's not so easy to do. Or even necessarily wise to do. So, you know, I'll pound a pizza before having something that actually has vitamins in it or something. I was losing weight for the first month really quickly, and I just wasn't eating enough. And you can't eat enough. The things that I, you know, call health food.
You looked pretty healthy. You didn't look like you had that much to lose before this, man.
I didn't think I did, but
yeah.
But I think I've stopped the damage by eating a lot of pizza.
Okay.
And, I put vegetables on it and stuff. But I have to.
Yeah.
I gotta eat. Anyway, that's my fuel. So
sure.
I stop at the same gas stations the motorcycle guys stop at, but I buy up all their Clif bars and candy and chips and stuff.
Yeah.
And
cool.
Take them with me while they're out putting fuel in their vehicle.
Sure. Well, I definitely want to ask how your buddy Jax is doing. We've been seeing the photos and stuff that you've been sharing through social media. This is obviously a big shakeup for him. You know, it's not normal for dad to take him on a, you know, bike ride for a month and not come back home. So how's he handling it?
No, he's in the groove now, though. We've got a routine, and
yeah,
whether it's at somebody's house or the floor of a church or the tent, pitching the tent, or going to a motel room, he knows what to expect when we, you know, when I let him out of the trailer, and it's a routine that isn't quite what he was used to, but I try to be consistent with, and he's loving it now.
Yeah,
he's gotten into the habit of barking at dogs when he's when he's in the trailer, because they chase us.
Yeah,
you know? It is just hilarious to see their faces. You know, they're chasing a bicyclist, and I've been chased many times over the years, and they've got that determined, confident look in their face when they're coming for your ankles. And then all of a sudden, the trailer behind me explodes in fury, and they look confused and wait, what was I doing? I should go back to my yard. And
well, that's just your rear security kicking in, is what that is. Your rear guard.
It is.
Yeah.
It's kind of nice. It makes it worth carrying the extra 75 pounds of dog and 8 pounds of food and 30 pounds of trailer and all that.
Oh, God.
Just to see those expressions.
Yeah, and I bet some of those hills, it feels like about 1,000,000 pounds.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Especially when you're going up a steep grade and he decides to reposition himself. You know how they curl around and around before they decide to lie down. I can feel every. It's just like he's dragging me back down the hill.
Oh my gosh!
But I just,
and you're just like, hey man, I hope you're comfortable because I'm in agony right now.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to switch with him someday, but that's not happening. I've almost traded him in for a Chihuahua twice.
Have you had offers?
But nobody wants him. I don't understand. He looks expensive to feed, I think.
Yeah, probably a lot more expensive than a Chihuahua. Yeah.
He's a good boy. No, yeah. we're having a lot of fun together. He is a great companion.
Yeah.
He's just, I already knew that because he's always with me anyway, but he's just awesome to be around all the time, so.
Yeah. Well, maybe see if he'll do the pedaling on the way back.
We'll see. I will definitely call you to update you.
Okay, yeah, let me know. I'll hold my breath. So, yeah, well, I am calling from Thousand Trails in Pacific City. We got away for the Memorial Day weekend, and I thought it would be a lot easier to do a call than it was. It's taken quite a bit of finagling on my end. I hacked into the lodge's Wi-Fi, and then that's why I'm calling you on Messenger, because I get no cell phone service out here whatsoever. But we wanted to do this because of Memorial Day. I mean, we had talked before you left about checking in every month or so, and then, you know, I kind of got busy and you got, you know, on a 3,000-mile bike ride and, you know, kind of lost track a little bit. So we're about a month and a half out now. But Memorial Day, you know, and you're doing this for our veterans, and it's just felt like a really important and very appropriate tie-in, you know, that we have so many folks that maybe some we know, maybe folks that were in our family or what have you, people whose stories we've heard who gave their lives for this country that we can think of and thank, but so many that we don't, that, and they don't know us, but they gave their lives in service to our country for the freedom for me to be out here in this beautiful place, for the freedom for you to be in, I'm sure, beautiful New Mexico, and to see all the things that you've seen and to have the trip that you have had. And it felt very, very right. So thank you so much for taking the time out to talk to me, you know, and make this happen. And I just thought it was really, really important to check in with you on this episode in particular.
Well, not a problem at all. And you're right. It is extremely appropriate. And you know, I think we should all just try to be worth protecting. These people died protecting us. And I've been giving, you know, again, I'm on the bike for hours, a lot of time to think, and thinking, you know, I just want to be worth that sacrifice. I don't just want to thank them.
Yeah.
I don't just want to be appreciative, you know, on Memorial Day.
Yeah.
I want to try to, you know, make it worth their sacrifice by, you know, doing something good. So I hope we all kind of pick that up.
Yeah.
Thanks for checking in, though. It's always nice to hear a voice I know.
To somebody from back home. Such as it is. Thank you for saying that. I don't know if it was the chill because it is raining and it's like 50 degrees out here. I'm outside, by the way, under a little overhang. So that could be why I got goosebumps. But I think it was what you said. That was really profound to me, to just try to live in such, and I don't think we ever fully can, but at least try to live in such a way to be deserving of that sacrifice. That's good, man. Thank you.
All right. Well, good. Good.
Well, okay. I'll let you get some rest and do
some more wisdom next
time.
Month.
I'll give you a month or so to think of it. So.
Okay.
All right. Take care, man. Be safe. Right. And keep checking in with us on your blog. You guys can follow him, like I said, RollingWithJax, JAX.com. And same thing, Rolling with Jax on Facebook and Instagram. And you can find the links to support Canines for Warriors from that website, as well as John's mostly daily blog updates. Anything else for the cause, John?
I think you've covered it.
All right, buddy.
It's been a pleasure.
All right. Yeah, you as well. Take care, man.
For someone who enjoys a well-brewed craft beverage at the end of a day, living in the Willamette Valley is like living in paradise. There are literally hundreds of craft breweries, wineries, and cider presses producing amazing stuff right here in our region, and it can be a little overwhelming. But it's also exciting, if you have the right guide.
That's why we love visiting the FOB Tap Room in Canby Place on Southwest Berg Parkway. They have over 36 taps of the absolute best craft beer, ciders, and wines, which are constantly rotating in a wide variety of styles. And their friendly staff has the expertise to recommend something you're guaranteed to love. They've got an awesome trivia night every Wednesday and other events happening all the time, so be sure to connect with them on Facebook so you don't miss out. See you at the FOB. Hey Tyler, did you know that the world has changed in the past 20 years?
No way!
Yep, it's true. The way people shop for goods and services has completely changed since this thing called the internet started catching on.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
And yet some realtors still offer the same old services in the same old ways and for the same old percentages. Victory Point Property Group in Canby believes it's time the real estate business caught up with the times. They'll meet with you for free, explain every step of the process, give you a clear game plan, and even let you choose the listing commission.
Really? They let you choose their commission?
Really? Victory Point Property Group understands this is one of the biggest and most exciting decisions of your life, and they'll do everything they can to make sure you handle it like a rock star.
Wow, that sounds great. I'm going to check them out by calling 503-263-4700 or by visiting online at victorypointhomes.com.
You do that. Victory Point Property Group, real estate reimagined.
And that's our show. Special thanks to our guests today, Ada and Ray Stout, and John Tate, and to all of our sponsors who really make it possible to do what we do. We encourage you to check them out and help support the local small businesses who support us. Hey, if you like what you just heard, like my awesome morning voice getting up early to produce this, please let us know. Write a review for us on Facebook, iTunes, or your favorite podcast app, and don't forget to subscribe so you never miss our latest episodes.
In our next episode, we'll introduce you to Mount Hope Farms. They're a family operation that combines hand-cultivated fruits you've probably never heard of with time-honored techniques to create some of the best jams, jellies, and other products you've ever tasted. We'll hear their story and try not to mispronounce anything next time on the Canby Now podcast.
If you have a news tip, an idea for a guest we should invite on the program, or suggestions of how we can improve, please contact us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Canby Now. Or to learn how you can start supporting our show and gain access to exclusive content through Patreon, visit campingoutpod.com/plus. Finally, enjoy your Memorial Day, but don't forget to pause for a moment and say thank you to the men and women who gave their lives for our freedom. The world is a better and safer place because of them and because of their sacrifice. Thank you.